Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce and brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping employers manage the future costs of healthcare. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Brianna Bowling, who's the president of Psychiatech, Belinda Coleman, the founder and president of the Coleman Group, Inc., Andy Miller, co-founder of Big Swift Kick, and Satya Akula, who the president and CEO of Amex. First up is Brianna Bowling, the president of a company called Psychiatech. What is Psychiatech, Brianna?
Psychiatech Technologies, we are a government contractor primarily. We take large amounts of data and put it into a format that is easy for decision makers to make decisions with it. So we're taking all kinds of data, everything from static data like addresses to more dynamic data, something like, you know, weather feeds, sensor data, and we put it into a visual format, usually some type of geospatial format, so that decision makers can see it clearly and make a decision with that data.
So give us an example of how that is shown up in real life and benefited a customer.
Sure. A lot of our customers are Department of Defense. So if you can imagine if a chemical bomb is put onto a town, and we want to take that weather data that say that it's going 30 miles per hour going northwest. We know that that chemical plume normally is going to be, you know, 50 feet high, and so it's going to be covering this amount of area. That means that, you know, 32 hospital beds are going to be compromised, and these are some alternate routes to get to those hospitals that are available.
When did you start the company?
I started the company in 1998.
And how big or small is it today?
We're about 40 employees now.
How did you get the idea?
I didn't actually have the idea. I didn't actually intend to start a company. I was a stay-at-home mom with two kids in diapers. And while there are people who are very good at being stay-at-home moms and and do a great job at it, and I admire them greatly, I was not so good at it. I got bored, and I needed to do something. So my husband at the time was working for a graphics company, and they had the need of converting Word documents to HTML. So I went to the library, got a book on how to do HTML, learned it, and then started doing work for him.
So you don't have a background or a computer degree, sciences degree?
No, I have an English literature degree from Goucher College.
You learned how to do this by going to the library and reading it and figuring it out yourself?
Sure, but my degree helped me with that. I mean, my college taught me how to, if you don't know
how
something, go find a book. Learn it.
That's a little unusual path. What is it about you that is kind of fearless that way?
My parents taught me to be fearless. There's nothing that there is to be afraid of. They both had very limited resources, and they used what they had to help us grow up. They didn't have a whole lot of money, so they actually bought a farm, cut down the trees, built a house, and we lived in that house without electricity or running water as children. It wasn't until I went to college that I had all of those utilities. And so it's taught me not to be afraid, and if you don't know something,
so I get the impression that you don't feel deprived having not grown up with electricity. That
not
you feel
at all.
It is a gift.
It is an immense gift. It's the best gift my parents gave me.
So how are you advantaged in a way that I'm not, because you grew up in that kind of an environment?
You probably, I don't know you well enough to say this definitively, but you're probably afraid of losing things, of losing your home or losing your assets and different things. I don't have that fear the same way other people do. I know that I can survive without them. Mm. And so it allows me to take probably some different risks that other people don't.
Right. So your relationship to failure and loss is just different than most people, you would think. Is that true?
I would say so, yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the early days of the business. How'd you get your first customer, other than your husband? How'd you get your second customer?
Yeah, no, and he was probably the easiest customer at that point. But the second customer came along because I joined a group called DC Web Women, which was a networking group that still exists in the area. I was a stay-at-home mom. I was kind of dabbling in this HTML, doing a little in the evenings. And I met a woman on there who lived in the city, again with two children, dabbling in the working world. And she lived in the city, I lived in the country, so I invited her down to bring her kids, and we pet cows and gathered eggs and did all the fun things you do on a farm. We had some grilled cheese. I sent her back home to the city, and about 6 months later, she called me up and said, hey, I got a job now at General Dynamics. We have this contract with the Department of Justice, and would you like to have this contract? So that was our first government contract, and from that, I've developed what I call the grilled cheese theory. And the grilled cheese theory is something I teach to all of our employees when they first come in. And it really is that you don't know where your next work is going to come from. So don't discount that stay-at-home mom with two kids in diapers. And don't discount the guy bagging your groceries. You need to tell everybody what your dreams and your goals and what you want to do, and treat everybody with respect.
What surprised you most about starting the business, looking back on it?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because I'm not sure. I think there were so many things. I think the biggest one is just how hard this is. I don't think it's an easy thing to own a business, to start a business. There's so many skills that come into it that there's really no way to prepare for it until you do it.
Yeah, I mean, most entrepreneurs are pretty good at getting an idea into reality, but then they have to run the thing.
Yes. And it's difficult. There's so many things. I mean, and it's not just the things you first think of, you know, like how do you balance the checkbook of a corporate account. It's things like, you know, what do you do when your employees come to you and they don't like their benefits? How do you deal with that? I mean, and what are the best ways of dealing with that?
Where'd you learn how to do this?
From my mother.
So give me the connection.
Yeah. My mom, I mean, while she didn't work outside of the home, she ran the corporation of our family.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of things having to do with that. She had very limited resources. She had to manage what she had. She had to get three girls who were all in high school at the same time to somehow cooperate and live in a one bedroom, you know, their own, share a bedroom together and not kill each other, which she was sometimes successful with and sometimes not. There was some blood occasionally, but so there was a lot of things about teaching other people how to compromise, how to delegate, how to use those resources, how to get those gardens planted, how to get things canned.
Right.
You know, who's going to use the hot water that night that we had heated up?
Wow. What'd you learn from your dad?
My dad, I learned the value of hard work. You know, my dad didn't have a lot of money, but he worked really hard. He was a forest ranger, but he also came home in the evenings and he ran the farm. You know, when they didn't have a home and they needed to have a home, they literally cut down the trees and sawed them up on a sawmill and built a house. You know, he wasn't an electrician, but he did the electric for that house. So again, not to be afraid of what you don't know, just go learn it.
You also said that you had the benefit of working for a company that turned out to be mentors to you in the form mm-hmm. of Aerotech. Tell us about that.
It did. When my first job out of college, I was basically the executive assistant to Jim Davis, and also to Steve Bisciotti, who are both the founders and the owners at that time of Aerotech, which became a fairly large company. I learned a lot from them. There were two different types of personalities. I would say that Steve Bisciotti is more of an evangelist type person in terms of that he was the one who got people riled up about what it is that is exciting about working at their company. And then Jim Davis was the one who really made things get done. You know, he was the financial guy that saw what needed to be done. So I learned great things from both of them. And they also allowed me to do a lot of different things that most newly college grads don't get to do. So, for example, I was helping to book a lot of travel. You know, we were spending at the time, I think it's a 10% fee for every one of those tickets we booked.
Right.
So at some point I looked at it and I said, hey, this doesn't make any sense. We're spending 10% of this money. We're sending it over to this travel agency. Why don't we just start a travel agency since I'm booking 15 tickets a day? And so they said, sure, you can. And so I went on down to American Airlines Travel Agent School and became a travel agent and started a travel agency in my office.
So you've had a lot of on-the-job training, so to speak, that kind of prepared you to run a business. Would that be a fair statement?
I think it's very fair. I think I have learned through the school of hard knocks how to do this and what not to do.
Yeah. How do you spend the bulk of your day today in the business?
I did something really smart last year. I hired a chief of operations. And it's probably one of the smartest things I've done since starting my company.
So did you recognize I needed to learn how to let go of control of some things? Is that what happened?
No, what I recognized was that I can't be everybody.
Right.
So I was going home a lot at night feeling very disappointed in myself and what I had accomplished for the day. Mm-hmm. Because I hadn't accomplished this list that was really designed for four people. So I finally recognized that. I hired somebody who also was, you know, I'm a big believer in hiring people smarter than you and more competent than you. So I hired somebody who knew more than I did about running a company.
Great. Where do you want to take this company?
Oh, that's even a better question. And I'm not sure I know the complete answer to that, which is probably not a good thing for the president of a company to admit. But there's a lot of places I'd like to take it. I mean, I think one of the biggest things we have to do is we have to expand our egg basket. We've been very DOD-centric, and we need to step outside of that because we are we take data, huge amounts of data, and we make it easier and accessible to people who are making decisions, that doesn't just apply to DOD. It also applies to everything from the census to UPS. And so we need to really learn how to capitalize on that prior or past performance and take it to another level and to new customers.
What would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished up till now is?
Well, it's actually a simple thing, and it's not, you know, earth-shattering. I think the toughest thing I've learned to do that was I didn't know how to do is write decent proposals. I still have my first proposal we wrote, and it was terrible. I kept it because it's an artifact of what I did wrong. I look back at that, and I think, wow, no wonder we didn't win. And so learning how to do that effectively is probably the thing that I think has helped me the most.
What do you look for in employees that you hire today? What kind of character traits do they absolutely have to have?
Actually, part of our Zakaia 101 training is how to recognize a good Zakaia employee. And one of that is work ethic. And that's a tough thing to look for. It doesn't show up on a resume clearly.
Yeah.
But it does show up in that if they stick with a job, they're not changing jobs every 6 months. I also am very, very fortunate that I've been able to, I can sit across from somebody and almost instantaneously know whether they have a good character. It's just some gift that God gave me. And so I'm looking for that little spark that says that they are going to put everything they have into their job. It doesn't matter so much if they know how to do the job today, but they're a person who's going to try really hard to learn it.
Yeah. What do mom and dad make of your success? If I was interviewing them, would they be surprised?
No. No.
What would they say about you?
That I've been a boss their whole life. My mom spent the whole time growing up, I'm the mother, Brianna. Let me do this. Because I was always trying to basically tell her how to be a mother, too.
Oh,
so,
boy.
So, no, I don't think they'd be surprised.
How about your proudest moment up till now, Brianna?
My proudest moment actually doesn't have to do with being a business. It is being a mom.
Yeah.
And basically trying to juggle all of that has
Great.
Been tough. But, yeah, my children, I'm really proud of them.
What's the website address for Zakaia Tech?
www.zakaia.com, Z-E-K-I-A-H.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Brianna Bowling, who's the president of Zakaia Tech. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us for this segment is Kimberly Stevens, who's the Business Development Manager of a company called CBiz. What is CBiz, Kimberly?
CBiz is a national provider of services in the areas of finance and employee benefits.
What would you say makes your company special?
The fact that we're able to bring people together across a wide spectrum of capabilities and services to provide solid solutions to our customers.
So you help your customers find people that will help them with their things that they do for their customers.
That's exactly it.
And what's the role you play with the company?
I serve as a business development manager, and in that capacity, I work to identify people who may have needs for the services that we offer. I meet with them, listen to what the issues are that they might have, and think of the people that we have in our midst to help them.
Why do you like your job?
I like it for that very reason. I enjoy meeting people and getting to know what their business is and working to connect them with people who can help them meet their goals. It's
what makes
feeling.
You so good at it?
What is helpful is that I genuinely care. Mm. And I do want them to have success in their business. And I'm also very excited about the talent and capabilities that we have to offer. And so since I'm able to believe in that and care about the outcome, it helps me to be effective in what I do.
Great. And I understand somebody who would be interested to reach you could find you at www.cbiz.com-midatlantic.com. Is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. We've been speaking with Kimberly Stevens, who's the Business Development Manager for a company called CBiz. And I'm Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and that was your Business Spotlight. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce and brought to you by Potomac Companies, helping employers manage the future costs of healthcare. For this segment, we have a young lady by the name of Belinda Coleman, who's the founder and president of a company called the Coleman Group. What is the Coleman Group, Belinda?
The Coleman Group is a woman-owned IT consulting firm here in the Washington, D.C. area, providing services to the federal government in the areas of cybersecurity and big data.
Tell us a little bit about big data. What does that mean?
In big data, we basically take all the data that a company or agency collect, and we make sense of it, and we make use of that data.
So give us a real-life example of what that means.
For example, for a health agency trying to determine the number of children under a certain age with a certain illness, say it's the flu, and how they contracted it and what vaccines were given, we can tell them the city, the state, the county, the municipality where that occurred, and the number of children affected.
So you take all this gigabytes of data and make it relevant to certain populations.
We make it relevant, we make it understandable, we make it useful for business decisions.
How did you get the idea for the business?
The name of the business or just the business itself?
The business itself, the idea to do this thing, big data and all that.
Well, I have my background is in computer science and math. I crunch numbers, I love numbers, and my parents were entrepreneurs, so I started the company. And it was in the computer science area, and of course, being proactive and being on the forefront of what's coming next, we thought we would make our competencies relevant.
Yeah. When did you start the company?
2004.
And how big or small are you today?
We're about 50 people today.
What do you like most about running the business?
Impacting lives and solving problems, solving clients' problems and impacting employees' lives in a positive way, giving back and making a difference.
Has that always been true for you?
Yes. It has
been. Take us back when you realized that this is what's going to be important to me. Do you remember a time when?
Well, I think as a kid growing up, my parents were entrepreneurs and my mother was a social worker. Mm-hmm. And we always gave to the elderly and single moms and homeless persons. And we were instilled in us to give back and help others, that we were blessed to be a blessing to others.
So you were a young person watching your mother help people, is that?
Yes. My mother was a social worker. My dad was an entrepreneur, so he helped persons if they wanted his services as a bus company, if they couldn't totally afford it, he donated a lot of time. And
that impacted you in a way that you said, you know what, I need to do this or I want to do this?
Well, both. I felt obligated as a citizen and as a person of resources, as little as they may be, to help others. And mm-hmm. So part of being a business owner is really helping others as well.
Right. Tell us about your background. You characterize your upbringing as very entrepreneurial.
Yes, my parents were entrepreneurs. My dad owned a bus company in the state of Alabama, and my mother was a social worker. So I started helping my dad with contracts.
Not just owned a bus company. He started the first one as an African-American man, did he not?
Yes, he did, in the state of Alabama.
So that's a pretty impressive thing.
Yeah, see, I'm pretty proud of him. I really am.
And I understand you had a role in the business starting very young.
Age 5, I was making bank deposits and talking to clients, and they often thought I was my mom. Well, they said, I hear a voice, but I don't think that's Mrs. Patton. Who is that? So I talked to clients, and one of our biggest clients was the University of Alabama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you also say that the bank recognized your signature and not
bank
your father's?
Well, at that time, my father's clients, there were no electronic deposits. They paid him with checks and sometimes cash in paper bags. So when there were checks, I would sign the check, not use a stamp, but physically sign it. So when I went off to college, the bank questioned my dad's signature because I was not there to sign the checks anymore.
What other roles did you play in the business early on?
Receptionist. I deposit bank statements. I review contracts.
At what age were you reviewing?
I even washed bus windows.
How old were you when you were doing all this? 5, you were making deposits, and then you got promoted to do something else?
I got promoted from, I guess, making deposits to reading contracts. 8, 9, 10, washing bus windows.
So looking back on it, how do you think you were shaped by those experiences?
I think I was shaped really by my parents' example, really watching them work so hard and then seeing the results of their hard work, the mm-hmm. success of the business, the way my father grew it.
So some people would see all that hard work and say, there's no way I'm ever going to do that.
I think my father used it twofold, my parents used it twofold. They show us the results of hard work, but I think the washing bus windows part was to show us that we did not go to school and become educated. That would be our lifelong stance, would be a window washer.
So clearly you took that lesson to
heart. I took that lesson to heart.
And
most
you went
definitely.
To college and you majored in what?
I majored in math and computer science in undergraduate, and computer science in graduate.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then what did you do? What was your first job out of college?
My first job was a computer scientist for the Department of Defense in Dahlgren, Virginia.
Uh-huh. Then what?
And then I went on to work for Digital Equipment Corporation.
What is it about computer science that's so fascinating to you?
just the entire world. I knew then that computers would one day rule the world, and I think I was right, because they are. And it's just being able to automate and make life so much more efficient and useful, and just the access to so much information. There's no reason now not to have access to information.
So you started the business back in 2004. Correct. How did you finance it?
Personally.
Out of your own money?
Personal income, $25,000 of our personal dollars initially.
Yeah. Was that scary?
Extremely, being a young couple with limited resources, taking our own money. But I had a very supportive husband who believed in my vision and my dream.
What were the early days like?
Scary, I would say. I had
what was the scariest part?
Not getting a check every 2 weeks like I had in the past.
Right.
That was the scariest.
Was there ever a moment of doubt that, oh my God, maybe I did the wrong thing?
Not a moment of doubt, but a moment of concern, I would say, knowing that it could be done. And my parents had taught us that we could succeed at anything. Right. But it was scary, yes.
So at what point did you realize I'm actually going to make this thing work?
When I grew from one contract to two, and from one person, me, to like three people, and then you know.
So then there was the transition from actually doing the work to leading people who do the work.
Mm-hmm.
For many business owners, that's really tough.
Mm-hmm.
Was that tough for you?
Yes, because it's almost like having an infant, having a child, and walking away from your baby in a way. I'm still pretty hands-on. I still visit clients, and I'm very much a part and billable somewhat still to this day. But I just think my parents and my upbringing and my education prepared me for it.
Yeah. So where's the future for the company?
I think we will grow. We look to grow more in the big data and cybersecurity areas. We're looking maybe to go global.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking to expand our services and our reach and just make a bigger impact.
What was it like to run a government contracting firm through a government shutdown?
It was nerve-wracking at best. I received my first stop work order ever. And it wasn't that I did not perform, but it was the funding wasn't there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we learned. We learned that adversity is sometimes a good thing. We were motivated to keep going. And we actually probably added some other people on other contracts that were mission critical.
Yeah.
So we learned to diversify more, to have more mission critical work, and to be always financially solvent the way we are. So we had good financial practices in place that sustained us.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
My leadership style, I would say that I set high expectations for the company, for its employees, but I, for myself even, in that the customers are key, and that we are, integrity is at the core of everything that we do, that we do nothing without integrity as a source and foundation. And I would think I'm tough, but I'm fair, and I take things professionally, not personally.
How about the character attributes that are absolutely required in the employees that you hire? What do they absolutely have to have?
Of course, they have to be competent, but they have to have integrity.
How do you know when you're interviewing someone that there's integrity there?
Well, we look at their background, and we look at what they've done, what they've accomplished, and we ask them a question. If there was a bag of money sitting right in front of you that you found under a table, would you turn it back in, or would you take it and help your family? And I know that people say, well, that's a strange way to ask people things, but the answer may surprise you.
Yeah.
And most times people will say, you know, I turn it back. And sometimes they'll say, I would take it because right now I really need it. I said, but what if you know it's not yours? I will still take it because my family need it. Well, that's sort of like a signal.
It's a signal.
A little signal.
Why does integrity trump competency?
Because integrity is doing the right thing when no one is looking.
There you go.
And you can teach competence, but you can't teach integrity.
No, you can't.
Mm-hmm.
So all CEOs know they got to learn something to stay relevant in this game. What's your next learning opportunity? How do you get better as a CEO?
You can always get better in everything. We can get better by keeping ourselves educated on the current issues of our country and our economy, and making sure that we have solutions to solve those issues. And when you stop learning, you need to be buried.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished, Belinda?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished? I would say giving birth to two children is one of them, and then starting the company and being able to sustain it, basically. It's tough.
How about your proudest moment up till now?
My proudest moment, I must say, is being a mother.
Mm-hmm.
I'm most proud of being a mom, because at the end of the day, when I balance it with, I have great kids, exercising, energy, that you just find a way to keep it moving. You just balance, you do what you have to do. I mean, I think as women, we're just given an unnatural talent to multitask, and I think God gave me an extra portion.
I think you might be right about that, because I don't know that I could do it. If I was interviewing your mom and dad, would they be surprised at your success? If they were here today, what would they say about you?
They would probably say she showed us something early on that she was going to do something we're not surprised at all.
Great. What's the website address?
www.ColemanGroupInc.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Belinda Coleman, who's the founder and president of the Coleman Group. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers mm-hmm. and leaders mm-hmm. Achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey mm-hmm. that the better I was at being a good human being, the better mm-hmm. leader and the better business I ran and mm-hmm. the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties. Mm-hmm. You have to communicate confidently.
Mm-hmm.
I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and today's show is brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping employers manage the future costs of healthcare. And for this segment, we have Andy Miller, the co-founder of a company called Big Swift Kick. Love the name. What the heck is it?
Peter, Big Swift Kick is a company that works with CEOs, and we help them accomplish exponential growth using science and candor. So our focus is on driving sales.
Primarily driving sales?
Primarily driving sales, but we have to look at other things, like if you're going to drive exponential growth, can your operations handle it? Can you service it?
Right.
You know, all the other support pieces behind it.
So science and candor. Give us an example of one and the other.
Okay. So I'll give you an example of science and one example and candor in another.
Okay.
So we had a company up in Philadelphia that wanted to double their growth rate. And we sat down and we took a look at a lot of things. So we use analytics. We use assessments. We use interviews. Think of it as a doctor who uses, you know, blood tests, urinalysis, MRI, office visit. And we came back and said, you know, you don't have a key account strategy in terms of acquiring key accounts. You don't have an expansion strategy. There's some other things that are missing. And if you put a couple simple things in place, our estimate is you can triple your growth instead of double it next year. And so that's exactly what happened.
So you bring tested processes and best practices to businesses that don't have them.
Yes. And okay. And it's based upon science and analytics.
Sure.
Versus... witch doctor methodology.
Right.
Nothing against witch doctors, by
cool.
the way.
And the candor piece?
And the candor piece is we had a CEO in the D.C. area who wanted to increase his growth rate. We sat down. We did all the analytics. There was ways to grow his business, but there was a bigger problem, and the problem was him. And we had to sit down and say, you can get the growth that you want, but the problem is you, because everybody here is afraid of you. And the reason for that is, I suspect you're bipolar. Now, I used to be a special ed teacher, so I know the symptoms and the signs
right.
to look for. And I said, you know, I hate to tell you this, but you're the biggest thing in the way, and people are scared of you, because when you walk in the door, they don't know what they're getting.
So isn't that kind of a gutsy conversation to have, because it's entirely possible you're fired on the spot for saying it?
Yeah, it's possible, and the fact is, I mean, you got to do the work, right?
Right.
So if you're not willing to do the work, so let's take a look at the flip side. Let's take a look and say, I didn't address the issue, and I made a recommendation, and then they hired me to help implement it. Well, we still have the elephant in the room that nobody's talking about, and they're still not going to get the results. So 3 months, 6 months, 9 months later, they go, well, we hired Andy Miller and Big Swift Kick, and we didn't get the results that we wanted, so his stuff doesn't work. Well, it's, you know, listen, you can hire a coach at the gym, but you still got to show up at the gym, and you still got to do the work.
Right.
So, you know, let's if you don't deal it up front, you're going to deal with it on the back end.
So focusing primarily on sales, has that been your core competency your entire professional life?
It's my passion. I mean, I used to run a data center. I used to program. I had code. I owned a software company over in Holland.
Yeah.
But it's about sales. My passion is sales.
So where did it begin for you? How old were you when you sold your first thing?
13.
So yeah, tell us about it.
So yeah, I was a paper boy, had a paper route, yeah. And I was fortunate enough to live in the suburbs where they were doing a lot of building and expanding, and the paper route expanded. And, you know, there were other paper route paper boys at the time, they were all paper boys, who could have gone after those new areas, and they didn't. I did. It's like, you know, I want to grow this. I went after it. And I expanded it, and then I had people coming to me saying, your route's getting pretty big. It was tradition to kind of split your route. You get to 100 papers or whatever, and you'd split it, and you'd give it to somebody else and keep one for you. And I'm like, wait a second. I have people coming to me. I don't have to split it. I can give them a territory and keep it. And eventually, I had 500 papers and 5 people working for me. So it was kind of my first accidental entrepreneur.
Yeah.
That's how it worked.
Well, looking back on it, what do you think you learned in addition to selling? What surprised you most about managing 5 kids?
Well, you know, everybody wanted to make money. I mean, it's because, you know, at that age, it's, you know, money is freedom, and you have this fantasy that you're going to save money and buy a car, right, that you're going to throw more money into, which you don't realize at the time. So I hired people who were motivated. I mean, rarely did somebody...
So at 13, you're hiring people that are motivated. How's a 13-year-old know somebody's motivated? Another 13-year-old, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, these are your friends that you're hanging out with.
You know.
You know who's doing their homework. You know who's doing their chores. You know who the slackers are. You know when you play.
And at 13, you were that serious about the business only hire the best.
You know who quits when you play sports. You know who cheats when you play sports.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want quitters and cheaters. You want people who are like going to do it. And now, could I verbalize it then?
Sure.
No, but it's kind of like, do you want this person on your team or not?
Yeah.
You know, that's the first ones you pick. So, yeah.
What'd you do with the money you made?
Some of it I saved, and some of it I did adventures.
So tell us about the one that you told us in the green room.
Yeah, okay, so you asked kind of what was your second sale.
Yeah, and, biggest sales job ever.
I think it was. It was a major thing. It was, so also at 13, myself and 6 other friends, all between the ages of 13 and 14, convinced our parents into letting us bicycle from just outside of Chicago to Roanoke, Virginia. It's been a while. You know, it's 13. I'm a little older than that now. But it was about 910, 920 miles.
Why? Why did you want to do that?
Well, it was... we had started... There was a guy in our church who would take a group of kids to camp every summer, and they would bike it, and it was about a 70-mile, 75-mile trip. And we did that one summer, like, this is cool.
Yeah.
And then we did it another summer. Now, I think we're 11 at the time. Then we did it when we were 12, and we're like, that's cool. Now, all our fathers were preachers, and they go to annual conference. And we're like, annual conferences in Roanoke, Virginia. Guys, why don't we bicycle to Roanoke, Virginia? And we're going, No, our parents aren't going to allow it. And it's like, well, let's plan this thing out. And I mean, if I had done my school the way we did this planning, I mean, we sat down, we made a list of which parents are most likely to say yes to most likely to say no. We wrote down what dad would object to, what mom would object to. We role played the objections. Okay, Dave, you're going to be my mom, and Marvin, you're going to be my dad. And we'd give them the script, and you'd have to object, and we'd have to role play it until we got it right. And
so you were doing sales training way back then.
Well, that's what we're doing. And it's like, We planned the route out. We had a round robin call list because you didn't have cell phones. There was no Segwagon, so it's like, what are you going to do? We knew where we were going to stay every night. We wrote letters to get permission ahead of time. We're like, what if we get sick? So we wrote up this letter to get it signed and notarized, you know, from our parents saying, these are our kids. They have permission to do so, whatever decisions.
So do you remember the presentation, the moment you had to talk to mom and dad and convince them?
Yeah, but remember, we made a list of most likely to say yes to most likely to say no.
Oh, so you filtered them.
So we sorted it, and we went to the first parents most likely to say yes first, and then we used peer pressure to get the ones at the bottom.
That's too funny.
Isn't that what happens in sales?
Yeah.
You kind of look at, you know, who's the team that's going to make the decision, and then it's like, who do we need to win over, and who's the eel in the deal or the naysayer, and how do we get so much peer pressure that they have to say yes and give in?
So when did you realize that, you know, I'm going to have to make this a career?
When I had my software company in Europe, I hired guys all over Europe and Asia and Australia, and I wanted them to sell a certain way, and I couldn't find anybody who could teach them. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to all learn the same methodology. You know, process is one thing. Social etiquette and the way you build relationship is different per country, and decision-making is slightly different. But I wanted us all to be off working off the same playbook like a football team. I couldn't find anybody to do it, so I did it myself, and I'm like, this is fun. If I ever get rid of this business, this is going on my list of something I want to do one day.
So you've been at it for a while. What's the single most important thing with respect to converting a mediocre salesperson to a really good salesperson? What occurs?
They have to want to do it. They have to want to grow. They have to want to get better. Not everybody wants to. Yeah, I think it's. Do they?
Is it skill or attitude?
To me, it's attitude.
That's my thought.
Yeah, it's attitude, and I want to take it a little further than that. I want to look at the little engine that can versus the big engines that can't. And the research is very clear on this. There was a book written called Adversity Quotient by a guy named Paul Schwartz. And he took a look at all these different predictors of what makes somebody successful and what doesn't. And the core competencies he came up with, and I may be using that out of context, was grit. You know, do they have grit? Do they have resilience? Do they have agility? Do they have tenacity? And that is the single biggest predictor. And when I say to you, think of somebody you've known in your life with grit, resilience, tenacity, and agility. Who comes to mind, and you think of somebody? Well, somebody come to mind as I mentioned that to you?
Sure.
Okay. How many of those would you like to have on your team?
Exactly.
And when we ask this question to CEOs, we go, how many of your existing employees that you've hired and trained would you trade for one person like that? The answer is 7.
Wow.
Yeah. And that to me is the single biggest difference, because they'll figure it out. If you're not providing them training, they'll go read a book, they'll go get a CD, they'll go pay for training themselves. They'll figure it out. That's what I want.
What's the website address for Big Swift Kick?
It's www.bigswiftkick.com.
Great. We've been speaking with Andy Miller, who's the co-founder of a company called bigswiftkick.com. Thank you, Andy. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
And your name is?
Mike Schmidtman.
And Mike, which organization are you with?
I'm with For Profit.
And what is For? Who are your customers? Who are the customers for For Profit?
We work for people who sell information technology products and services.
And what do you do for them that's special?
Typically, they want to improve their sales, hire better people, or make more money.
And what do you do with them and for them?
I work with the sales leaders, that's the sales managers, to attract and hire better people, to win more new accounts, and to try to raise the margins on what they're selling.
Well, why do you like what you do for a living?
I love it because we're transforming businesses, and I get to work with people and make a difference.
You actually see the results of how you're actually able to transform a business and help people?
Sure.
Give me an example
of
that.
Well, what's happening right now in the sales world, Herb, is that the whole selling model is changing. As people have access to the internet and their own information, mm-hmm. they don't need salespeople as information deliverers as they used to. Mm-hmm. So as the sales world is changing, that changes the way that we have to attract and hire people. It changes the way they sell and represent their products and services. And it changes the way the whole selling model is handled within a company. And so we help them manage that transition.
So you're helping businesses transition into what they need to be today. For and one of the reasons is because of the whole world of information technology.
Exactly.
What's the website address?
www.4-profit.com.
One more time?
www.4-profit.com.
This is Herb Cohen, and this has been your Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the Fairfax County Chamber of Commerce. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and today's show brought to you by the Potomac Companies, helping employers manage the future cost of their health care. For this segment, we have a young man by the name of Satya Akula.
Akula.
Who's the president and CEO of a company called Amex?
Amex,
sorry. What is it?
So Amex is, we are in the federal contracting sector. We do a lot of IT management, IT and management consulting.
And when was the company founded?
The company was founded in 1999, but I got involved with the company only in the last 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. Due to acquisition. So we bought the company, a bunch of investors for the company.
So a lot of companies do IT consulting and tech management. What makes you guys special?
So what we do is we do very high-end consulting work for the customers. You know, if they have a great program, you know, very critical, like, you know, healthcare.gov. And they want to make sure that it is done on time within the budget, according to the rules and regulations. We kind of help the customer to do that.
Right. Well, why did you want to be a part of this business?
Well, this is how I got into the business. I used to, after my graduation from University of Maryland, I worked for NASA as a contractor. Mm-hmm. So I kind of, you know, got in.
Coming full circle?
Yeah, exactly.
Only this time owning it.
Yeah.
But why buy this one in particular? What was it about this particular asset that was intriguing to you?
Well, actually, I have done another business before. I started my first company in 1994. I kind of sold the company to another company, ended up with Nortel as a federal sector president. And then, you know, 2007, and I kind of, you know, left the company. I was trying to do, you know, different things. As a part of doing other things, I got involved with this company, and it was a great company. And now, you know, we are trying to scale up to, you know, much larger than when we bought the company. Uh-huh.
Have you always had entrepreneurial tendencies?
Yeah, I think so. You know, as you know, I came from India to study here at University of Maryland. And
get a chemical engineering degree?
Yes, I did my chemical engineering and then went to University of Maryland again to do my management degree.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, U.S. is one of the greatest countries in the world to be an entrepreneur.
Why?
Because, you know, it has all the support system, you know, taking your idea to taking to the market, you know, with the right group of, you know, management and, mm-hmm, you know, financing, mm-hmm, and all that. But in my first company, I didn't need much of the financing. You know, I self-funded from the credit card. I think, you know, no other country that at least at that time when I was growing up, you know, is more entrepreneurial.
Well, you make it sound easy. It's not. Starting a company is tough. I don't care what country. What is it about you that was able to do it?
See, one of the things I have is I have a technology background. You know, I used to do software development for large enterprises. You know, so you got to get closer to the customer, and once the customer believes you that you can do the job, and it's easy. Well, I don't mean easy, but, you know, there's always.
How do you convince the customer?
So the customer, you know, the first time you meet the customer, you know, just to get to know the customer, but to really know the customer, you got to do something for the customer so that you show the value.
And where did you learn how to do that?
I think, you know, when I started my company in 94, there was no internet, you know, in 98, 97 time frame. Now internet was just coming up, but there were no resources. So I had to learn on the fly by doing it. You know, one day you make mistake, you know, next day you correct the problem, you keep going and you learn.
But not, you know, that's not a slam dunk for most people. Some people give up. What is it about your background or your DNA that you are so persistent?
So I came to this country, you know, as a student with one suitcase, you know, so I can really go back to
those days.
Yeah, exactly. But But, you know, you have to take risk, you know, in especially in business. I think you don't want to take a big risk because of your education. You have to calculate the risk. Calculation of the risk.
Right.
And also, you know, when I started my first company, I didn't know much about doing business.
Right.
You know, you just learn, and, you know, it took me
three years.
Exactly. You know, 3-4 years to learn. And then now, after you learn, you got to scale it up.
Right.
So that's what I did, you know, from 94 to...
So you were born and raised in India, correct?
Yes, yes.
What was life growing up like in India?
It was fun, you know, just like any kid, you know, going to college and everything, you know, I had fun.
What did mom and dad do growing up?
Mom was a housewife, you know, trying to raise, you know, 5 kids.
Where were you in the birth order?
I'm the fourth, and I'm the first in the, you know, boys, and I have 3 older sisters, uh-huh. and then my younger brother.
Okay. And dad, what was dad doing?
The dad was a, you know, career, you know, he's a banker, you know, working in a bank, not a banker. So he was, you know, 9-to-9 guy, you know. He never come home, you know.
So that's a little bit of a departure from your family tradition to go entrepreneurial, isn't it?
Yes, yes, definitely. You know,
so when did you get some resistance?
Oh, definitely, definitely. Especially my mom, you know. Hey, you know, why you, you don't have to take business, just get a job.
Right. So, why didn't you listen to it?
Well, you know, when she was growing up, you know, with my dad and everything, that was a safe thing right. to do. You know, get a job. You work there for 30, 35 years, you know, you get your, you know, retirement benefits and whatnot. But when you come to this country for so far away, you already took a big risk.
Yeah.
So I just kept taking more risk and more risk. And it's not, again, you know, taking, you know, big risk, it's a calculated risk.
Right. So how old were you when you realized you wanted to leave India, come to the United States?
During my second year or third year in college, I decided to come to U.S. And because, again, you know, because of the openness of the, you know, U.S.
What surprised you most when you got here?
Well, it's amazing. It's amazing the, you know, number of cars on the streets and the tall buildings. And,
culture,
you know,
shock?
Yeah, culture shock.
What city did you arrive into?
Actually, I arrived into Cincinnati.
Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Of all places.
Yeah, Cincinnati, exactly.
And what did you do when you got here?
I went to, you know, Cincinnati for, you know, University of Cincinnati for a quarter, and then came to University of Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Did you know English?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, still, even if you know English, you know, it's challenging because of the, you know, accent and everything. Not, you know, my accent.
So you hear this so many times from first-generation immigrants, that this fearless approach to come to this country because it's a land of opportunity, and then you hear the success stories. But it's just never that easy. This is a country that's tough.
Yeah.
And this is a country that likes stereotypes.
Well, true. You're absolutely right. You
know, so what was it like to come to this country as an Indian with an accent and your mm-hmm. skin tone and everything right. like that, and have to hit the wall of that stereotype for the first time?
Yeah, it is tough. You know, when I meet any new customers, you know, it's always, you know, there is a little bit lag, I would say. But after 5 minutes, when you talk their language, you know, when I say language, you know, their technology, their
right.
challenges, they get it. They'll be free to, you know, open up and talk to you. You are absolutely right. You know, initially, that's a hindrance from both sides, because I don't know what to expect from the other side, you know.
What was it like the first time you experienced it?
It was a little bit, I took it personally.
Of course.
You know, again, you know, every, you know, as a, you know, Indian, and I had my pride and everything, you know, but it's, you know, what, this is great. This is a great country again. Once that thing is out, you know, it's like two friends talking.
But I'm curious, it happens. Do you say, well, what the heck? I can't let this overcome me, or what?
Well, exactly. Again, you know, you take it as a challenge, right? You know, so, well, that's okay. You know, first time, second time, but it's not going to happen rest of my life. So you got to keep it going.
Right. We have surprisingly a large number of younger people listen to the show. What would you tell to a first-generation immigrant who has the same kind of entrepreneurial spirit that you have, that just got his teeth kicked in?
Yeah. Well, don't let that stop you. Don't let that stop you. And it's only, you know, it's not going to happen every day. And you just got to pick up yourself and, you know, keep right. at it. Yeah. Keep going.
Where did you learn how to run a company? There's one thing to start a company and be an entrepreneurial, but then you have to take it to the next level. Right. How'd you learn that?
Well, so that's, again, you know, having the right people around you. When I started my first company, you know, I was hardly, you know, 30, 35 years, but I never, you know, brought up in this country, so there was a lot of challenges. I did do my management degree back in Maryland, but that only gives you from the, you know, textbook knowledge, but not practical.
Right.
You know, you got, I used to have, you know, a couple of, you know, more senior and mature people around me, you know, they used to
mentor me. So the key is to surround yourself with really good people.
Good people. And, you know, I was lucky enough to have such people. They really helped me out.
Looking back on it, what would you say the toughest thing you've ever accomplished is?
Toughest thing I ever accomplished, not from the business perspective, but I hiked Mount Kilimanjaro.
Did you really?
Yeah, in 2012, September.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's quite an
accomplishment. That was very challenging because I didn't know whether I was going to finish it.
Oh, good for you. What's the website address?
The website is www.amyxamix.com.
Amyx.com.
Yep.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Satya Akula, President and CEO of Amyx. Right.
Thank you, Pete.
My pleasure. We've had a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Brianna Bowling, the president of Zakiya Tech, Belinda Coleman, the founder and president of the Coleman Group, Andy Miller, co-founder of Big Swift Kick, and finally Satya Akula, the president and CEO of Amyx. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. We'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a radio show. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.